Peter Tilden.
Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10. Hour number two continues right now, brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. He'll, of course, beat anyone's advertised price or your mattress is free. Very excited to give you a chance to win tickets to see the iconic Kenny Rogers. Over 100 million albums sold. He'll be doing his Gambler's Last deal. Could be his last tour ever. So you want to go see him? We'll play the news quiz in a little bit. Ann Wilson, who was just on the show last week of Heart. You can go see her. Take your choice. We're going to talk to a woman who traipsed through North Korea. I didn't realize what that tourism industry was like. But we want to talk about that and find out exactly what it's like visiting North Korea. But first, I see right now breaking news. A Russian fighter jet just flew within 5 feet of a U.S. Air Force reconnaissance aircraft over the Baltic Sea. According to U.S. officials, the encounter was assessed as unsafe. I figured it'd be a good time to check in with somebody who knows what Russia wants, how we can ally our visions, or if we can. I mean, many presidents, many administrations have tried to reach out and strike a reset, and it hasn't worked. Joining us now is Stephen Sestanovich, Senior Fellow for Russian Eurasian Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, Professor of International Diplomacy, Columbia University School of International Public Affairs. And thanks for joining us, Stephen. How are you?
I'm fine. How about you?
I'm doing okay. So let me, first of all, I mean, we saw yesterday retaliation, Russia threatened retaliation for downing a Syrian fighter jet. We saw now that we have a White House that's under investigation for our possible collusion, but bigger, we know that Russia influenced our election. But an interesting thing has happened, and tell me if I'm right, over the last 6 months to a year, it feels like more people are embracing Putin is not maybe such an evil guy, not such a bad guy. Maybe we can reach out. Maybe we can't find common ground. And that trend seemed to be growing up to a point, not necessarily with certain people in Washington, but certain people in the public sphere. Is there an opportunity to hit a real reset with Russia, or are our desires, needs so different that it can never happen?
Well, it's pretty tough. This has not been, just the usual blip of disagreement. We've had those in the past.
Right.
You know, in the 90s, the Russians didn't like what the U.S. was doing in the Balkans, and 10 years ago, we didn't like the way they treated Georgia. But this is a deeper decline. You know, the two sides are kind of baring their fangs at each other on just about every issue, whether it's Syria or Ukraine or cybersecurity or exercises in the Baltics. You just mentioned those planes nearly colliding with each other.
Right.
It's a whole set of issues, and we haven't seen that since the Cold War. And in fact, that's why some people are talking about it as a new Cold War. So putting the pieces back together is hard work, and it can't be accomplished just by resolving one disagreement.
So there are many theories. First of all, you had a president who looked like he was going to have outreach and looked like he was going to try and bring us closer, that was a major goal of his objective. But you hear different stories about why Putin is so angry. One of them, and I wondered if you had any insight into this, is that he disliked Hillary so much. And part of it was that in 2016, there was a publication, something called the Panama Papers, that revealed secret bank accounts of his friends and associates. And he looked at that as a personal attack. And that made him so angry that he decided, I'm going to retaliate. Does that sound realistic? Does that sound like something that Putin would do, to the extent that they would try and hack our election? Or would they have done that anyway?
I don't think there's any doubt that President Putin does not like Hillary Clinton, and I don't think there's any doubt that he didn't like all those Panama Papers revelations. Whether that explains the downturn that we have in the level of tension, I'd separate those two things. Putin is kind of a cynical professional. He deals with people that he doesn't like all the time. He's used to it. I think that there are definitely people who wanted to see, you know, how much trouble can we make for the Americans? But, by the way, I don't think they expected it to work. They just thought it could embarrass Clinton, make her election a little more ragged and tumultuous. The big thing that produced this downturn and that makes it so hard to manage is, of course, the crisis over Ukraine, because that stands apart from everything else. It's not just, you know, monkeying with emails, and it involved annexing territory of another country, sending your troops in, a kind of traditional conquest,
right,
aggression. And that has got people around the world on guard, worried about whether Putin is not just a troublemaker, or as Barack Obama used to say, that kid in the back of the class looking bored and like a troublemaker. Instead, it makes him look like a traditional kind of aggressor and destabilizing force in the world. And, you know, since Ukraine, you've had the big, big intervention in Syria. We just seem to see an awful lot of issues differently.
Well, he also, I mean, aside from that, he wants to assert himself as a global power again, break up NATO, break up the European Union, and thrilled that that's happening, I'm sure. But this guy also is in partnership with Iran and supports Hezbollah and supports Assad. And it's in Chechnya, I mean, they're rounding up people in concentration camps, putting gay people in concentration camps. How do you sit down with a guy like that and say, well, let's sign some common ground where we can destroy ISIS together? And what is his take on ISIS? I mean, they have a Muslim issue. There's 20 million ethnic Muslims there. I'm sure he's concerned with fighters coming back and attempting some kind of overthrow or creating havoc for him. But they haven't had a real problem with Islamic terror in Russia, as far as I know. There have been some, but it's been minimal.
And it's been related primarily to Chechen nationalism, but they are on guard always for Islamism and, a kind of radical fundamentalist strain of Islam taking hold in their own Muslim population. Putin has used that issue with many American presidents to say this provides a kind of basis for common ground. Over time, we found it kind of difficult to cooperate with the Russians on these issues, and you see that right now in Syria. We have a different definition of who the terrorists are. We find that, you know, we want to bomb one set of guys, they want to bomb another,
right,
and in the course of it, we find our, you know, military establishments kind of bumping up against each other in ways that makes everybody very nervous. They are definitely pursuing a policy in the Middle East that is just different from ours, and the core of it is an alliance with Iran. You're absolutely right about that. This is the biggest asset that they have in the Middle East is a cooperative relationship with Iran. And, you know, the Trump administration seemed to have the idea that they could come in and wean the Russians away from that. I always thought that was extremely naive. You're telling Putin, you know, we'd rather have you not be so friendly with your best friend in the region. Never seemed like a powerful argument to Putin. Still doesn't.
Yeah, what leverage can you use to influence that?
Well, one of the things that people thought might be leverage is that we would kind of sell out the Ukrainians,
right,
if
right,
they would be more helpful in the Middle East. I think the president has discovered that that's a little easier said than done. You can kind of throw out that idea in a campaign debate, in a bull session with your advisors, but actually making it happen creates a tremendous uproar. Your European allies go nuts, and many of your Middle Eastern allies go nuts. You know, the president discovered on his Middle East trip last month that actually the major powers of the region that are allied with the United States are horrified at the thought of doing business with the Russians, because the Russians are so tight with the Iranians. So we've had a kind of drawing of lines and a tightening of positions. I think we're further away from any sort of normal business-like relationship with the Russians than when President Trump took office.
We're talking to Stephen Sestanovich, Senior Fellow for Russian and Eurasian Studies at the Council on foreign relations. And I got to ask you, where does Russia stand now as far as their health? I mean, I know that Putin has managed, it looks like, to smash any kind of dissent in his country. And I see that polling, if polling is accurate, that people there look at us as the enemy and they're threatened. And he's keeping that out there. The United States and the West are the bad guys. But their economy is in the toilet. And the sanctions hurt them as far as borrowing. How do they grow? Where do they do their GDP? How do they keep things moving?
Yeah, Putin has actually been kind of frank in public about this. Last year, he said, you know, unless we have fundamental transformation, our growth will, quote, hover around zero. not much of a promise to your people. And a lot of people are sort of hurting, because they've had two years of recession, and that's just the past 2 years. In the financial crisis of 2008-2009, the Russians had the deepest loss of GDP of any country in the G20. So they had fat times in the first 10 years that Putin was in charge, and then they've had kind of lean times since then. He is saying to the people, he just did last week in his call-in show, 4 hours of taking questions from here and there, he said, you know, the recession is over, and we're going to have a renewal of growth. But you also see that there is more public dissatisfaction. You've had two rounds of kind of significant protest demonstrations in the past few months. And I don't think Putin feels that his job is at risk, but I think he feels his complete political dominance, his monopoly on the public dialogue, that may be in question.
Should we be worried about that when he feels threatened? Is that when he lashes out and does stuff that's not good for the United States?
That's one theory, that he likes a confrontational view with the West because it helps him explain to his people, you know, we're embattled. And he said this again just last week, you know, people are trying to pick on us. They don't like it when Russia is independent and strong and they want us to bow down. So there is that view. But I think most of their foreign policy initiatives tend to actually be sort of separate from domestic politics. I mean, you know, the Ukraine crisis had a logic apart from anything that was happening domestically.
I guess, Stephen, to what extent, you keep hearing about these oligarchs. I know even Joan Rivers was selling her apartment for a lot of money in New York City, and an oligarch was looking to buy it. Is that Russian-funded money? Are they laundering money here through real estate? I mean, they got the RT network, which is up and running, where they can promote their agenda. But this way, you can buy businesses, real estate, and you can broadcast to the airwaves to the United States. And eventually, if you're successful enough, you can make all kinds of growth from the inside out instead of from the outside in. Do you see that happening?
Oh, absolutely. You have, but you've got rich people from around the world buying into the American real estate market. You know, Chinese home purchasers home and more in California, for example. You guys know all about that.
Absolutely.
In New York, a Russian zillionaire that I know has apparently told people he's putting hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe a billion, into American real estate. And that doesn't have to be, and surely isn't, government-controlled. In fact, Putin has discouraged what he calls the offshoring of assets. He wants people to bring their money home and invest in Russia. People are investing in the U.S. because they want a place to run if things get bad.
Got it. Wow. Hey, last question before you go, and thanks for your time. Did you watch the Megyn Kelly interview with Putin? I'm curious what you thought if you watched it.
I saw most of it. I didn't see the entire uncut version. He was in a pretty feisty mood. He likes to do that with Western journalists to show, you know, you can't push me around. And, you know, he's become a pretty practiced entertainer at that kind of snarl. She said, you know, he was perfectly gracious in private, and then when the camera went on, he became a different person. But, you know, I've seen American politicians do the same thing.
No kidding. has he changed as he gotten older? Is he mellowing at all or no?
I wouldn't say so. I think he's actually getting a little more ornery. The first time I met Putin was actually with Bill Clinton in 1998. Putin had just been appointed prime minister. And he came into that meeting all meekness and deference. And, you know, I'm the new guy on the block and I need to learn how world statesmen work. That isn't his style now. He tends to lecture. He's very long-winded. He's very combative. And he likes to put journalists and other political figures in their place.
Wow.
Likes to make them wait hours for meetings, that kind of thing.
Well, I thank you for coming on with your background. You gave us a lot of insight because, again, I think for people's perception of how easy it is to reach out and say, hey, we can find some common ground is a bit simplistic. It's much more difficult and, like you said, virtually impossible, and the rift you think is bigger than it's ever been. Thank you for insight, Stephen. Sestanovich is a senior fellow for Russia and Eurasian Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, professor of international diplomacy at the Columbia University School of International Public Affairs. His Twitter is at Sestanovich, S Sestanovich, and it's CFR.org is the website, correct?
Absolutely.
You got it. Thanks. Love to talk to you again, because I don't think this issue is going away anytime soon. And thank you for that.
It never goes away.
That's another way of saying it. Goes away. See, it's like my cousin's rash. It never goes away. Coming up, the other big story in the news is the horror of this poor kid and the parents who had to live through this nightmare, who traveled, the Wombiers, who traveled to North Korea, Otto Wombier, and went there on a vacation. And came back in a coma, has passed away. John McCain's calling it murder, that the North Korean murdered him. I didn't realize how many people travel to North Korea on vacations, on tourism. And one of those who did is Wendy Simmons, an author and award-winning photographer. She wrote a book, her first book, My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest Worst Place on Earth. We'll get her sense of how this could have happened and what you can expect and how easy or hard it is to go over there, what it costs. A whole world that I didn't know was available to us of travel to North Korea. And how restricted it is and who goes with you on a daily basis. And you give up your passport the minute you land there and you are stuck. You can't get out. Who would do that? 800-222-5222 if you'd like to participate or ask her a question. She'll be on next. We also have tickets for Kenny Rogers, the Gambler's last deal. Could be his last show ever. And Ann Wilson of Heart. You choose which of those concerts you want to go to when I tell you to call for the news quiz. So we got a lot to do when Peter Till at 10 continues right after this.
In a bar in Toledo, across from the depot.
Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10 continues hour number two. That would be Kenny Rogers. Over 100 million albums sold. Looks like it's calling it the Gambler's last deal. It could be his last tour. You want to go see him, or you want to see Ann Wilson of Heart. Call now, 800-222-5222. We'll play the news quiz, and I'll give you a chance to win those tickets. While you're doing that, I want to welcome Wendy Simmons. Wendy is an author and award-winning photographer. And I had her on ages ago. She wrote a book, My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest Worst Place on Earth. And because of this horrific story where Otto Wombier comes home in a coma, he went there on a vacation, a five-day travel vacation. And the company is called Young Pioneer Tours. And they've stopped offering North Korea trips to Americans. But his father said that North Koreans lure Americans to travel to North Korea via tour groups that run out of China who advertise slick ads on the internet proclaiming no American ever gets detained from our tours and this is a safe place to go. What happened with him, he went on this five-day tour of the country, was headed to China for a visit. He was detained at Pyongyang's airport and accused of trying to steal a propaganda poster. And because of that, he went to this trial, this one-hour kangaroo court. They found him guilty, and they sentenced him to, I think it was 15 years of hard labor. We don't know when he went into a coma over there, but he was sent back here in a coma and then died shortly after. The thing that's amazing to me is last year, more than 4,000 non-Chinese tourists visited North Korea. I didn't realize how many travel companies and tour companies are luring people over there. I also didn't realize how dangerous it was. Wendy, thanks for coming back on the show. I haven't talked to you for a while. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you doing?
All right. So when you hear this story, it must resonate in a special way for you because you were there. You traveled the country.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a devastating story. I've been really heartbroken, as I'm sure a lot of people are.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, it certainly resonates.
So what do you, what's your sense of that? Tell us about, how did you go over there? How did you get the okay to go? Like, can I go? Dino says to me this morning, she's going to talk you out of going, Peter, because I know you. You love that kind of thing, an adventure. When you're told you can't go, you want to go. How did you get the itch to go there, and how hard was it to get in?
You know, first, it's not hard to go. That's probably changing. But when I went, which was, as you mentioned, a couple years ago, it was a very easy process, surprisingly so. And like you mentioned, I went through one of the companies that was based in China. Now, at the time that I went, I only knew of two companies. One was Corio Tours, and the other was Young Pioneers. And I went with Corio. They had come recommended to me by a very legitimate travel agency in the United States where I've worked with a lot. And I found them to be exceptionally professional. They were very measured and very legitimate. They warned me about the dangers. I mean, they were not alarmists by any stretch. And they certainly, you know, said it was a very safe country and so forth. But they advised about the State Department warnings and so forth. When I had looked at the Young Pioneers website, you know, I did at the time. I specifically did not choose them. And subsequently, after getting home, for lightning on the fire, but they actually trolled me on Instagram when I posted photos and told anecdotes. They countered me and told me I was not telling the truth and were somewhat aggressive about the things I was saying about North Korea.
Who countered you? The Pioneers, the travel agents?
Young Pioneers, yeah.
They were attacking you on the internet saying,
Yeah, which is very strange now to see them in the spotlight. But Corio Tours made a point of having me come for a briefing in China before I was allowed to go and making certain that I understand all of the rules. So they never claimed it was, you know, 100% safe or made light of the fact that it was, you know, someplace that I was going that should be taken seriously. But they also, you know, they weren't wrong in saying it didn't take place in the sense that there's not petty crime, you don't have to worry about being mugged, those kinds of things. But, you know, they never made light of the fact that there's no diplomatic relations, that once you're there, there's no outside communication, that you shouldn't break any of the rules, that you need to be sensitive and aware and follow.
All right, let me stop you right there, Wendy, because already I'm there. So I'm there, so I contact them and I say, I want to go to North Korea, I want to go with you.
Yep.
Again, this was not the tour company that took him, and it is fascinating to hear that they were the voice of North Korea in pushing back on your Instagram. But what were some of the things they warned you about going to North Korea? What did they say could happen
It's like they don't want to alarm you because, of course, they want you to go,
yep.
But they also don't want to be responsible for having one of the people they send there be stuck. So, you know, it's everything from the absurd to the things that you would expect. So the absurd would be you're not allowed to fold a picture of any of the great leaders in half. This is considered disrespectful. You know, you can't bring anything in that they can misconstrue as a slight against any of the great leaders or anti-Korean, you know, that kind of thing. It's, you know, it seems rather obvious to me. You can't go outside by yourself. You can't say any negative things about the great leader.
All right, well, let me ask you that. So you're in your hotel, mm-hmm. you're in North Korea, you're in your hotel room. You want to go out and take a walk. You want to have a smoke. You want to go down to the lobby and go outside and have a smoke. What happens if you try to go out by yourself?
You simply cannot. I mean, that's the thing that was so curious to me about the story from the beginning. There's not a chance in the world that once I was in my hotel that I would try to do anything, like go outside or go to an unauthorized floor. There are guards everywhere. So I always found it somewhat incredible, and I was incredulous that he would have done something like go to an unauthorized floor. Not to mention, he was in a different hotel than I was, but my hotel lacked electricity, so it was dark. And the only time there were lights on was in the downstairs lobby, in the main lobby. But when I got off the elevator on my floor, it was pitch black. Pitch black.
How do you find your room? You got a feel for the room number? What are you doing?
Well, I was the only one on my floor, first of all. But I write about this in the book, that I would use my mobile phone as my flashlight when I'd get off the elevator to navigate through the hallway to find my room.
Wow.
So I was never fearful of my life, but I was, you know, I wouldn't say afraid, it's the wrong word, but you're sensitive to the fact that it's a dangerous, weird place. So it would just never occur to you, any normal person, it would never occur to you to do something so wrong. So I find it hard to believe that that video, I mean, I don't know, conspiracy theory. From the very beginning, I always wondered if it was him in the video. It was just such an egregious offense that they would have warned him against doing it. I'm incredulous that it was him.
Talking to Wendy Simmons, author and award-winning photographer, she went to North Korea. You didn't use the tour company he used, and you were...
No.
You got a smell that something may have been up with that tour company. When you're there, from the minute that you land and you go through whatever customs that you go through there?
You go through immigration, and then you go through some type of security where they search you in your bag, and they take your cell phone, and they look through your cell phone, and, you know, you're not ever exactly sure what anyone's doing since your cell phone's locked, but they sort of huddled around it and studied it for a while, and your bags go through scanners, and then you're released.
All right, so then once you're released, do you meet up immediately with the people who you're going to be with?
Immediately.
And they're with you every second of every day, other than when you go to the bathroom or you go into your room, which has no electricity?
In my case, they were with me even when I went to the bathroom. So subsequently, when I've written about it, I've had people write to me or write about me and say that I described something that didn't happen to them, that my situation was much more strict or that wasn't their experience. But in my particular circumstance, and it may have been because I was a woman traveling alone, and I didn't come with a group, and I didn't go with a liaison from Europe or somewhere. Maybe they were more suspicious of me, but I was literally never alone unless I was in my hotel room. And then they stayed in the hotel with me, even though they were from Pyongyang. And when we left Pyongyang, they stayed in rooms next door to me. So during the day, if I had to go to the bathroom, one of my handlers came with me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And they have your passport. You know you're not leaving. I remember you telling me that you went to a stadium to see an event, and it looked like they staged the event just for you. You said you're driving through the city, as I recall, and the things that you did looked like people were just showing up to put. It was like they're putting on a play just for you, so you'll come back to the United States and say, "This is what I saw."
Yeah, I think I remember seeing you. It felt like an immersive play that everyone was in on. It really, you know, you sort of spend your entire time trying to discern what's real and what's not real, and the stadium event that you're talking about, I had something cancel last minute the day before. I think it was on a Sunday. And one of my handlers was listing a number of things that she could substitute for me. And she sort of said football game. And so they told me there was a football game happening at 9 o'clock the next morning. And when I said sure, they made, you know, like a million phone calls. And then the next morning at 9 a.m., I arrived at the main football stadium to a legitimate football game going on. Only there was like 40 people in the stands. And then halfway through the game, you know, thousands of people showed up. Like they had been making calls all morning to get fans there. So the whole thing felt a little bit, you know, unreal. Like they had probably thrown it together for me, since the majority of what goes on there seems pretty much thrown together for your benefit. So, you know, you show up at the hospital, there's literally not a person in the hospital, and they tell you that all the patients went home just before you got there. You know, that kind of thing happens all the time.
And did you get to see Papa? Did you? I also understand, because I started reading about when I heard about his situation, and I remember interviewing you last year, I started remembering you saying that when you're driving through the countryside, they keep you very far away from communities, from poverty, from seeing people. You're just in areas that seem like the market is, it's the one market that's stocked with stuff. It's the one schoolroom where the kids are. You don't, everything looks like that. And you don't get to wander off and go somewhere where you could be exposed to real people walking around, eating, doing whatever, correct?
Well, they try. They try very hard to expose you to their version of what they think North Korea should look like to an outsider. But it's impossible because you're on Earth. So you're constantly exposed to the real North Korea if you're looking hard enough. But, you know, for example, outside of Pyongyang, it is very much an impoverished third world country. But if we were passing something particularly egregious, my handler would sit next to me in the back seat and talk incessantly to me so I couldn't look out the window, you know, that kind of thing. Or they won't let you take any photos when you're outside of Pyongyang unless it's a specified photo-taking location. So I guess to, you know, limit the amount of evidence that it's a poor country. Or when you're in Pyongyang, they try to stick to particular routes around the city so that you're avoiding much of the, you know, poorer areas of town, that kind of thing. And you're certainly not allowed to just interact with anybody you see or talk to normal people. You know, everything is very staged and controlled to the extent possible.
That's okay. So with your handlers, you're with handlers 24/7. Did any of them become, what's the word I'm looking for? Did they slip? Did they, you know, when you get to hang a lot with somebody, Does a real person ever kind of slip out where they ask you questions, or you see it's that help me type thing in their eyes, or they want to say something to you, or something is said out of character, where you catch a moment of, wow.
Yeah, I write so much about this in my book. It's actually sort of the crux of it, because I was with these two women so much, as you refer. You know, with the older one, who is much more experienced, I would say maybe in total 10 minutes, you know, snippets that totaled up to 10 minutes, where she seemed kind of like a normal human being, but she would snap right back into her robotic self. The younger one, who was far less experienced, they told me she was fresh at her job. That's why I nicknamed her Fresh Handler. She was usually the person who was tasked with taking me to the bathroom, so we had a little bit more time alone, and she was a lot more curious about the outside world, and she'd been exposed to Western culture through pirated movies and things like that. And, you know, they were both excellent at their jobs, and they both towed the line about as good as any two people possibly could. But she certainly showed a little bit more vulnerability and a little bit more willingness and openness to understanding other cultures. And, you know, I think a few times there was moments when she expressed a desire to come to America. You know, but they would never, you could never, ever, ever get them to say a negative word about their country or their leader.
But
ever.
Could you ask
he
them,
was blasphemous.
Could you ask them, like, hey, are you seeing anybody? Are you married? Do you have kids? Any personal stuff or no? It was.
Yeah, I asked them all those kinds of questions. I mean, I was there to learn. I purposely go around the world to learn about other cultures, and so to be deprived of that was making me insane. So I asked them those questions, and generally they lied or didn't answer me. The younger one did tell me that she, you know, wasn't married and was hoping to be, and that her parents were anxious for her to get married. And they talked to me a little bit about having love marriages versus arranged marriages. And I knew the older one was married and had a daughter. But if you said things like, do you miss your daughter when you're traveling? You know, those are the kinds of questions you really could never get answers to.
Boy, I got to tell you. Well, the book is My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest Worst Place on Earth. Takes on a different tone at this point now with this Otto Warmbier's parents having to deal with the fact that who, we don't know what happened. I mean, allegedly, he defaced some poster. That's it. And
allegedly, he tried to take it off of a wall.
I mean, amazing. And for that, you get 15 years of hard labor. And we don't even know, could he have gone into a coma from abuse day one? How did the coma happen? What medical treatment did he get?
I don't think they'll ever know. And, you know, I will say this also. There's no stores. At the time when I was there was no stores that I saw anywhere with any goods in them. And the only stores they bring you to are propaganda stores. You could buy all the propaganda you wanted everywhere. And it's the same propaganda that they hang all over the place, which, again, I mean, I just can't imagine why anyone would go to the effort of trying to steal any when it's available everywhere. So I really find it hard to believe that video was of him, but I don't know.
It's heartbreaking, Wendy. Wendy, thanks for coming on. We'll have you on your next adventure. Wendy Simmons, author, award-winning photographer. Like I said, the book is My Holiday in North Korea, The Funniest Worst Place on Earth. And it's Wendy Simmons with two M's. WendySimmons.com is her website, and the Twitter's at Wendy E. Simmons. Thanks, Wendy, and thanks for some insight
in
what's like traveling to North Korea and how creepy that the company that you went with was somebody you got a bad vibe from and then attacked you after you went. Well, thank you, Wendy.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Take it easy.
Talk to you soon.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. That's unsettling. Coming up, we're going to give you a chance to win tickets to Ann Wilson of Heart or Kenny Rogers. It's the Gamblers. He's calling it the last deal. I hope it's not his last tour, but it sounds like maybe that's it for Kenny. So if you want to see that, call now. We're going to do the news quiz in just a minute. 800-222-5222 is the phone number. We'll be right back. Talk Radio 790 KBC. That contest music is happening. Makes me happy. Should make you happy. Let's go to the phones. The lines are lit. Let's go to Maria in Santa Clarita. See if she wants to get some tickets. How are you doing, Maria?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. What do you do for a living, Maria?
I'm a retired nurse.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, boy, I'd love to be married to a retired nurse because you know how to take care of everybody, right?
Yes, I do.
All right. Well, here you go. You ready? Multiple choice or true and false, and what you do is you listen to me carefully. Ready?
Okay.
Amazon plans to replace Whole Foods workers with A, robots. B, outsourced workers from India. C, former post office employees. Is it robots, outsourced workers from India, or former post office employees?
Gotta be A, robots.
It is robots. They're looking at your checkout yourself. They're denying that they're going to downsize, but there are reports today in several publications they're looking at robots. A Russian couple died when they, A, drank too much vodka, or B, drowned when the car they were having sex in rolled into a river. Is it too much vodka or having sex in a car that rolled in a river? Yeah, they were in the back. They drowned if a car rolls into a... By the way, we've all had sex. How distracted are you that you really don't notice that the car done rolled into the river? Really? Which former president shook the hand of passengers on his flight? Every passenger. Was it Jimmy Carter? Was it George W. Bush or was it Bill Clinton? Carter, Bush, or Clinton?
Jimmy Carter.
He shook hands with every passenger on board a Delta flight from Atlanta to D.C. I wonder, even if he didn't want it, he's forcing himself to shake his hand. Who did Congress nominate as the Democratic nominee for Georgia's 6th Congressional District? It's the big election right now. Is it Martha Clue? Is it John Ossoff? Or is it Karen Handel?
John Ossoff.
And it is John Ossoff, and we'll have all of those results for you later on today. Let's do one more question. Amazon Prime Wardrobe. You know Amazon Prime. What does it allow you to do? Yeah. Does it let you try on and return clothes for free? Does it allow you to dress just like Jared Kushner? Or does it send you clothes monthly based on your previous purchases? Does it let you try them on for free? Allow you to dress like Jared Kushner? Yeah, there you go. For you, really, you got it down. You're listening carefully. Yeah. And because of that, you're going to either Kenny Rogers or Ann Wilson. You stay on the line. And we'll make sure you get your tickets.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you. It was fun. So stay on the line. You'll get your tickets, and I'll wait here patiently for Dr. Drew. And Peter Tillman 10 continues right after this.